We believe God is calling us
to be the church our neighbors need.
The church we need.
The church that God has always had in mind.
God is calling us,
Irving Bible Church,
to be a multi-ethnic movement
of missionary disciples
formed in the way of Jesus
for the sake of the world. God is calling us,
and we will follow.
Well, good morning, everybody. So glad that you are here. If you have your Bible or you have it on your device, grab it. Let's go to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew, first book of the New Testament. We're going to be in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount this morning. If you've been hanging around here for a little while and you know anything about my family, you probably know that my kids are really into musical theater. All three of my kids, my two teenage boys and my 10-year-old daughter, that theater is just sort of their thing. We spent all weekend this weekend downtown Dallas at the Majestic Theater where my boys were in a student performance of The Lion King. Next weekend, we'll be with my daughter, who's Amaryllis in Music Man. And I think then we have another show the weekend after that for one of my sons who's in a school show. We're just a theater family. And it's not unusual for my boys to go into their bathrooms and close the door and practice their songs really loud. And sometimes they actually will be in there doing that in their respective bathrooms at the same time. So we have sort of dueling show tunes going on from the upstairs. But a couple of years ago, I heard my son Will singing a song that really sort of struck me. I was intrigued about the song, listening to it. It's a song called Beautiful City. I was intrigued to learn more about the song and that the song is a song from the musical Godspell, which is a kind of creative retelling of the Gospel of Matthew. And I was even more intrigued to learn a little bit of the backstory of this particular version of the song. You see, the songwriter, Stephen Schwartz, wrote the song originally for the Godspell movie back in 1973, but 20 years later, he completely rewrote the song. If you've seen the movie, Jesus is sort of a 70s hippie, and the song has kind of a sappy, sentimental kind of 70s pop song feel to it. But he completely rewrote the song as a ballad of hope. And he rewrote the song 20 years after its original composition because he wrote it for a special performance that was scheduled to be a benefit concert in the city of Los Angeles to help bring healing and restoration to that city after the riots and the aftermath of the tragic beating of Rodney King. In the midst of that painful moment in the life of that city, they wanted to put together a benefit performance. And he rewrote the song and put it on the lips of Jesus right before his Last Supper. And Jesus saying to his disciples, we can build a beautiful city. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. We can build a beautiful city, not a city of angels, but a city of man, a city for humanity, a city for flourishing, a city of peace. What I love about the song is it reminds us that the gospel of Jesus has profound implications for this world. That word gospel that we're so accustomed to, our English word gospel, it actually comes from an old English word, Godspell, which just means good story. And the good story, the gospel of Jesus, certainly has implications for the next world. It certainly has implications for our eternal destiny. Don't misunderstand me. But I think what can sometimes happen is that we as Christians in the church can think of the gospel almost exclusively in terms of the next world, almost exclusively in terms of our eternal destiny, and miss the reality that the gospel has profound implications for this world, here and now, for this city that we inhabit. We're concluding this morning a 5-week sermon series called Our Calling, where we're exploring together the vision that we believe God is calling us into over the course of the next 5 years. And we've summarized that vision with this little statement that says, God is calling us, the people of Irving Bible Church, to become a multi-ethnic movement of missionary disciples formed in the way of Jesus for the sake of the world. And each week we've unpacked one element of that statement, that God is calling us to a deeper place of commitment, that he's calling us to be a multi-ethnic movement, that this is the dream of God to create one new multi-ethnic humanity, and that we find ourselves in the midst of an incredibly diverse city, and God is calling us to be the church that our neighbors need, the church that we need. Not just a church that draws people in, but a church that sends people out, a multi-ethnic movement of missionary disciples, apprentices of Jesus that wrap our story around his story and join him in his mission to bless the world. Formed in the way of Jesus, formed in the way of self-giving love. And this morning we want to talk about what it means to be formed in the way of Jesus for the sake of the world. And we're going to look at this passage in Matthew chapter 5 that I think gives us that sense of calling, that sense of identity. In Matthew chapter 5, we're sort of toward the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus has just finished his Beatitudes. And here we find in the Sermon on the Mount the core of Jesus' teaching of what it looks like to be his disciple, his apprentice. And we said a few weeks ago that I believe that the deepest solutions to the deepest human problems are found in apprenticeship to Jesus, found in the life of discipleship. Not the only solutions, but the deepest, truest solutions to the deepest human problems are found as we follow Jesus and allow his transforming work to happen in our lives. And Jesus here gives us the core of what that looks like, the core of the good life. What it means to live a life that is good and to become a person that is good and to be a force for good in the world around us. And here in Matthew chapter 5, he gives us two images, two metaphors of identity and vocation. And then with those metaphors, he offers with each one a warning. Look with me, if you will, Matthew chapter 5. We'll pick up in verse 13. He says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." Jesus here gives his disciples, and through them to us, two metaphors of identity. This is who you are, Jesus says. Identity and vocation. This is the life that you're called to live in the world as my disciples. And the first of those metaphors is the metaphor of salt. He says in verse 13, "You are the salt of the earth." Now, it's important before we explore the metaphor itself just to recognize who it is that he's talking to, because the word that we actually find here in the original isn't you singular, you individually, it's you collectively. It's our word, y'all. I think I've mentioned to you before that my friend John Dyer, who's a member here at IBC, is both a theologian and a techie, and he put together a website that you can go to called yallversion.com. And in it, you actually see all the places in the original Bible that we see the word you and think it's about me and miss the fact that it's actually not you singular, it's you plural, it's y'all collectively. Jesus is saying here, y'all are the salt of the earth. You together, this band of my disciples, this community of Jesus followers, you are the salt of the earth. And I think for us to understand that sense of identity and vocation, we have to sort of get out of our own mindset when we hear the term salt and think about how they would have understood it in the ancient first century world. And I think it's actually complicated. It's sort of multi-layered how they would have thought about salt. And one of the ways that they would have understood and heard about salt is that this is actually a metaphor of significant value. We think of salt as something that's very easily accessible and very inexpensive, but that wasn't true in their day. It was actually much more complicated to produce salt that was usable. One of the key sources of salt in ancient Israel was from the Dead Sea, where there's such this high concentration of salt. Kim and I are actually going in about 3 weeks back to Israel, and we're so excited. We get to take Kathleen, our 10-year-old daughter, with us this time. And we were talking this last week about all the things that we're gonna do and all the places we're gonna go, the things we'll see. And one of the things I started talking to her about was the Dead Sea, with this high concentration of salt so that you just float. You can stand straight up like this without your feet touching the ground and your shoulders are up above the water. Her eyes got huge. She couldn't imagine it. But producing salt that was usable in everyday life was much more complicated back then. And so salt was actually something very valuable. In fact, our word salary in English is etymologically connected to the Latin word for salt. And some have suggested that it's actually an expression, this word salarium, that would be used to refer to a financial allotment given to a Roman soldier to be able to buy salt. Others have suggested maybe it's even that they were actually paid in salt. We have an expression even today that says a person is not worth their salt. And that's an idea that's connected to the notion of value. This image of salt of the earth would be heard by Jesus' first followers as an indication from him, you are more valuable to this world than you realize. You ever have somebody in your life who called something out of you, right? They saw something in you, and then they called it out of you, maybe a teacher, a parent, a coach, that said to you, you have something to offer. You have a contribution to make. You are more valuable than you realize. That's part of the way that Jesus' first followers would have heard this image and part of the way in which I think we should hear it today. No matter what our circumstances, no matter what we've done or what's been done to us, no matter where we find ourselves, Jesus says to us, you are more valuable to the world. That y'all collectively are more valuable to the world than you even realize. You have an important contribution to make that you don't fully grasp. You are the salt, the earth. Of course, we hear salt and we immediately think of something that we have in a little shaker that we put on our food, right? We think salt as flavor, and that certainly would have been part of their understanding as well. Saltiness is one of the kind of four core flavors, sweet, sour, bitter, salty. I do most of the cooking in our family, and I'm not really all that good at it, but I really love it. It really is just something that brings me a lot of joy. But I gotta tell you, my downfall is salt. I mean, I just find myself constantly apologizing for the people I'm cooking for because I got it too salty. And part of the deal is that I'm just really worried that my food is not gonna have enough flavor. And so I sort of overdo it on the salt. The salt is for adding flavor. And there's some sense in which Jesus uses this metaphor with his disciples to say, you add flavor to the world. You add flavor to the world by bringing joy, peace, hope, love. I don't know about you, but it seems to me that where we find ourselves in the world today, this world could use some joy, some peace, and some hope, some love. Jesus says to his disciples, you are more valuable than you realize. You bring flavor to the world of joy and peace and hope and love. But I think there's yet another sort of layer to this metaphor, that one of the most ancient uses of salt was for medicinal purposes. That we have a saying today about somebody who rubs salt on the wound, right? Somebody who rubs salt on the wound is somebody who made a wound hurt worse. But that is traced back historically to the idea that salt was something that they had that they used for medicinal purposes. And while it made it hurt worse, it had to hurt worse if it was ever gonna get better. And there's something about this metaphor that Jesus is communicating to his followers. you heal the wounds of the world. You're the salt of the earth. Perhaps a final element of this metaphor, a layer of understanding of the image, is the recognition that salt in the ancient world was a preservative. That we're so accustomed to preserving things through canning or through refrigeration, but that's only been a possibility for about the last century. Prior to that, the only means of preserving, particularly meat, was to pack it in salt. And so salt would have been used as a preservative to try to keep meat from decay, to keep it from rotting. I think there's something very suggestive about this metaphor from Jesus, because he's essentially suggesting that the world, left to its own devices, is subject to decay, subject to rot. That we shouldn't actually be any more surprised or shocked or scandalized when the world acts like the world than we are when meat decays, because that's the way it works. That our job, though, as the salt of the earth, is to function in a preservative way in the world. But it only happens as we get up close, as we come in contact with the world around us. It can't happen as we remain in isolation. That as we come up close, that our lives are meant by Jesus to have a kind of preservative function in the world. You're more valuable than you realize. You flavor the world with joy and peace and hope and love. You heal the wounds of the world, and you preserve it from decay. But with the image comes a warning. And the warning is captured in the words of Jesus when he says, "But if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot." Jesus says the warning here is salt losing its saltiness. But we got to stop and think about that for a second and recognize that sodium chloride is actually a very stable compound. In other words, salt doesn't lose its saltiness by itself. It's not subject to decay. It's a very stable compound. So the only way that salt actually loses its saltiness is when it gets mixed with something else. When it's compromised, when there's sand or some other substance that comes in and dilutes the salt, it loses its ability to flavor, to heal, to preserve. The warning that Jesus gives here is the warning of compromise. That as his followers, we cannot allow some other sense of identity or vocation to compromise our calling to be his disciples, to be salt and light. And we live in a world that's filled with all kinds of other identities on offer, all other kinds of vocations and callings, all kinds of other ways in which we can find ourselves compromised, confused, mixing in a little bit of Jesus with a little bit of the world. Whether it be the world's way of thinking about and engaging in politics, the world's way of thinking about and engaging in the pursuit of money or relationships or sexuality, all kinds of ways in which we can find ourselves compromised. And Jesus says, if salt loses its saltiness, if it's compromised, it's useless. You are the salt of the earth. Then Jesus gives the second metaphor. Look with me there in verse 14. Y'all are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. You are the light of the world. Once again, we need to recognize that this image has at least a couple of different meanings for the first hearers. And the first is just recognizing that what light does is pushes back darkness. light dispels darkness. Jesus is saying, as my followers, as my disciples, apprentices of me, your job is to go into the dark places of the world and push back the darkness. Bring the light. I remember a number of years ago when my wife first made a trip internationally to go visit some of our ministry partners internationally that are working to combat human trafficking, sexual slavery. She had the opportunity to go into some of the darkest places that she's ever seen. As she walked the streets of the red light district, saw brothels out in the open. This thriving industry of sex trafficking, fueled mainly by affluent Westerners who were sexual tourists, exploiting oftentimes vulnerable children, young women. She walked into those places and it was so dark. But I'll never forget when she came back from that trip, one of the things that just so moved her and transformed her was seeing the Jesus people who live their lives and give their lives to try to bring hope and healing into those dark places. And to see the way in which the light shone so brightly in the midst of that darkness. The truth is, the light shines brightest in the darkest of places. And we as followers of Jesus are called to be people who go into the darkness and bring the light. Light pushes back the darkness, but another layer of the meaning is the way in which light illumines our path. That in order to be able to see the path forward, we need light. And that's what this image is intended to convey to Jesus' followers. Jesus is actually seizing upon imagery that you find in the Old Testament, particularly in the book of Isaiah. One of the key themes of the book of Isaiah is this theme of light. In Isaiah, Isaiah writes about the people of Israel. Isaiah 49, verse 6, the Lord speaking through the prophet says, I will make you a light to the Gentiles, to all nations, that my salvation might reach the ends of the earth. Jesus then says, let your light shine before people that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. He's saying your good deeds, your being light in the darkness helps illumine the path to life, helps illumine the path to God. By living life with such good deeds, people see God and glorify him. They come to know him. You are the light of the world. You push back the darkness and you illumine the path to life. But with this image also comes a warning. And that warning is hiddenness. Not to hide the light under a bowl. And while Craig sang you This Little Light of Mine a few weeks ago, I'm not going there. We'll let him be the singer on stage. But that's our calling, is to let our light shine and not to hide it. And here's the thing. Those of us who are called to be the light of the world, we really like the light. We like to come together and sit in the light and enjoy its warm glow. We like to be with other lights like us. But the thing is that we will not dispel the darkness and illumine the path of light to life if we never go into the darkness, if we only stay in the light. We're called to be people who come here together so that we can be fueled to be sent out into the world, to be light, to dispel darkness and illumine the path to life. How does all this translate to us, Irving Bible Church? We believe God's calling us to become a multi-ethnic movement of missionary disciples formed in the way of Jesus for the sake of the world. And we've been talking a lot over the course of the last few years about this idea of being a transformed people, a transformed city. And I think if we're honest, a lot of our effort, or a lot of our focus and intentionality has been on the transformed people side of the equation. And once again, don't misunderstand me. We intend to move forward, continuing all of our efforts full speed ahead, not losing any sense of momentum around seeing lives transformed here at Irving Bible Church. But we believe God's calling us more deeply into what it means to bring transformation to our city. And what sometimes happens is we think first our lives are transformed, and then we go transform the city. But what we actually find is oftentimes as we seek to live out our identity and vocation in the city, pursuing the work that God has called us to, it's that work that transforms our lives. And so we believe God's calling us into deeper places of transformation in the city around us. We've identified six key areas of focus where we believe God's calling us deeper to be salt and light. These are not the only ways in which we will seek to serve and transform our city, but these are six key areas of focus where we want to mobilize you guys, the people of Irving Bible Church, to serve in these areas. And here are the six. First, bringing presence and provision to the under-resourced in our community. Second, loving and investing in at-risk youth. Third, welcoming and resourcing newcomers to the country. Fourth, creating compassionate, connected, consistent spaces for recovery and healing for people who are suffering from addiction or pain. Fifth, facilitating environments and conversations that help adults flourish in either their marriage or their singleness. And sixth, being the kind of community where individuals and families with special needs can worship, grow, rest, and belong. These six key areas of focus aren't new for us. These are actually expressions of what we're already doing, things that we've already been a part of. But what we're saying is over the course of the next 5 years, we believe God's calling us deeper into those places so that we raise both the profile and the impact of what's happening in these areas. I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about the idea that if each one of us who calls IBC home, if there's 2,000 of us who call IBC home and are committed to the vision and mission that God has called us to, if each one of us served only 10 hours a year to serve the needs of our community, that over the course of the next 5 years, we would mobilize 100,000 hours of service to our city. Can you imagine what God could do with 100,000 hours of his people being salt and light in our city? But as we began to think about that, the question came into my heart and mind, why stop there? What if we could significantly expand the number of hours that we're serving our city, not by increasing hours, but by increasing the people who are joining this mission? And so our dream for the next 5 years is that God would double our capacity to serve the needs of our city by doubling the number of people who join his mission at IBC through local outreach, multi-site expansion, and church planting. Please hear me. I don't envision that that means we want to double the number of people who are sitting in this room. That's not the idea at all. We do want to be a church that draws people in, but we also want to be a church that sends people out. And we believe that we can mobilize more people to serve the needs of our city through reaching out locally, inviting more people in here, but also by sending people out to establish new, fresh expressions of the local church. And we're beginning to pray and to dream and to plan about what that might look like through strategies of multi-site expansion and church planting. And please understand, I have no interest in seeing the kingdom of Barry Jones or the kingdom of Irving Bible Church expand. I have a passionate interest in seeing more and more people coming into the kingdom of God. And we're the people who have been called. You are more valuable than you realize. You flavor the world with joy and peace and hope and love. You heal the wounds of the world and preserve it from decay. You push back the darkness You illumine the path to life. That we together can make a difference in our community. That we can be salt and light. That the gospel of Jesus, the good story of Jesus, is not just about the life of the age to come. It's about life here and now. And together, living as salt and light, we can build a beautiful city. So I've asked my son, Will, as we conclude our time together in this vision, to come and to share that song with you. The words that Jesus in the story sings to his disciples. We can build a beautiful city. We can build a beautiful city. God is calling us to become a multi-ethnic movement of missionary disciples formed in the way of Jesus for the sake of the world. you, that we are more valuable than we realize because we flavor the world with joy and peace and hope and love. We heal wounds and preserve from decay. We shine as light, pushing back the darkness and illuminating the path to life. The path to life that's found only in Jesus. May we be the salt of the earth, the light of the world. And it's important that we recognize that the reason that we're called into this identity and vocation is that that is who Jesus has been for us. That he's come, the one of ultimate value, and taken on flesh to dwell among us, and lived a life that showed the world joy and peace and hope and love. He's come to heal our wounds, to preserve us from decay. He's come to push back darkness and illumine the path to life. And this morning we remember who he is and all that he has done when we come to this table and we take these elements, the wafer that represents his body that's been broken for us, and dip it in the cup that represents his blood that has been shed on our behalf. The ushers are gonna release you a row at a time and you'll come file past the elements. If you can't navigate the steps, just slip up your hand and they'll be happy to bring you the elements right there where you're seated. As always, there's an opportunity for you to respond to what God may be prompting in your heart and life this morning by coming and praying here at the front, maybe lighting a candle, or maybe you have a burden, a concern that you wanna share with someone who's here with a blue candle. Maybe there's something that you need to deal with God this morning. It'd be good to invite another person into that place. Or maybe you want to know what it means to trust in Jesus for the very first time. That's why they're here. On the night in which Jesus was betrayed, he took bread. When he gave thanks, he broke it and he said, "This is my body and it's for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after supper, he said, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Drink it in remembrance of me, for as often as we eat this bread and we drink this cup, we proclaim the good story of Jesus until he comes again." Let's partake together this morning.